Welcome to the FS podcast hosted by Exadel, the leading provider of digital transformation, managed services, and staff augmentation. Today we're joined by Steve. Steve is a consultant in recruitment and HR. Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, thanks for having me.
So, is there any chance you could start with why you're an expert on culture, kind of a bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So I've worked in human resources and in leading operations through training and development for over 20 years. I'm currently an independent consultant in human resources, leadership and operations. And I've worked in organizations of many different sizes, from startups to big corporations. When it comes to culture, I've seen how it impacts small and big all the same.
Great. I was thinking we could start at the beginning. Why should leaders care about culture?
Yeah, I mean, culture is the spirit of an organization. Organizations, especially when you get to big companies, they're going to have mission statements and visions and guiding values and so on. But in the end, culture is where the rubber hits the road. It's what really makes the organization, or like I say, it's the spirit. And leaders should care about it because leaders are the ones who impact the culture the most. And they do that through, you know, what they're allowing to have happen on their team and what they discourage from happening on their teams. And longer term, people are going to stay in an organization because of the culture that it has. Hygiene factors, so pay and compensation, that all impacts, but what impacts the most is how people feel when they go into work, and culture is that feeling. And within companies, we have to remember that the leaders, it's not just about the organization and the whole, but it's about the team. So like in a country, I'm in Canada, I live in Quebec, which is the Francophone province. The culture in this province is very different from the culture in the province of Alberta, let's say. But the reality is, the country's culture is made up of all the subcultures. It's no different in an organization. The company's culture is made up by the subcultures that are found in each team, which, like I said, is influenced by the leaders of those teams. So we have to remember, people often, they won't quit the company, they quit their boss. Well, that has a huge implication of the culture that that boss has created on the team. And so as leaders, we want to ensure that we're creating a culture that breeds the right behaviors, the right attitudes and approaches to work. Because at the same time, culture can be something that is used to, somebody just might not fit in with the culture because of those attitudes. So as leaders, we need to make sure that we're breeding the right ones, and they're the ones that are going to achieve those nice vision statements and missions and so on.
We have a kind of saying in marketing where we say sales is like what you say about yourself, and then like branding is what people say about you when you're not in the room. And it sounds a bit like recruitment's kind of what you tell job candidates, and culture's what they tell you about you.
Exactly. And to your point, and that's what I mean by people quit on the longer term because of the culture. They'll come in because the company looks cool, or they like the products, or the job sounds interesting. But over the longer term, it's that feeling that they get. And when I say going in, I mean, going in can be getting up from your bed and going to your kitchen table and working virtually, or commuting to work, whatever that looks like. But that culture of how do they feel when they're going into work, that's what the culture breeds within people. And that's what's going to make them either stay or leave over the long term. And I just want to say, when talking about people, we're talking about really the high performers. And why I want to specify high performers is because those are the people who they're not afraid to leave. They're not afraid to take their talent and go elsewhere. They know they have options. And if they feel underappreciated, or if they just don't feel right within a certain organization or environment, they're the ones that are going to leave and will have the biggest impact on the organization.
Very interesting. There's a lot of talk about diversity in the workplace. What does diversity mean to you, and how can companies work to create a culture that embraces diversity? And I guess, how can they use that diversity to, you know, create a good business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's diversity and culture are going to go hand in hand. And so let me start with the first question is, what is diversity to me? Studying in HR, we heard about diversity and often diversity, and companies approached it that way in that it's a visible diversity. So in that case, we're talking about gender and age and ethnicity. And so visibly diverse, great, check, done. But it has so much more to do when we just even look at that, different genders, they have different upbringings, different experiences in life. So how they're going to approach the same situation, it will differ based on those experiences, based on the paradigm that those experiences create. So when we're looking at diversity, we have to consider that, well, for one, it's not just what we see. It has so much more to do about, you know, when we look at the LGBTQ community and all that, it's being inclusive of everyone and appreciating that those differences can actually make us better. And that is, again, allowing people to bring that, those different paradigms. So how it can make an organization better, or how we can do better with a diverse organization, it's about cultivating those different paradigms to really get the full spectrum of, you know, when we're on a project, we need to make a decision. How do people really feel about it? It's getting that, the different experiences that everybody has, and getting that input to get the full, again, the full spectrum from everybody in the room. And often what we'll see is that diversity of people can't really be themselves. Well, then we lose out. We don't get their true opinion. We're getting the cultivated opinion of the organization. And so how can organizations, like I said, diversity, like culture, it has to do with a lot with the leadership. And they have to be able to build the trust in people so people can feel like they can be themselves, and they don't have to kind of follow a model of, you know, I don't quite fit in because everybody's one way. And this will happen even if the organization is visibly diverse, but everybody has to behave corporate, we'll say. And so the diversity allows someone to be, as long as they're professional and they're tactful, it allows them to be themselves. But the leaders first have to cultivate the trust in people so that they can allow that to come out. They can be themselves without fear of, well, I'm not going to be like everybody else, or I'm not going to be like other people on my team. Am I going to be punished or not rewarded for being different? So again, leaders have to build that trust and cultivate that.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on middle management. What kind of role do they play in culture? And how can C-level execs and founders help middle managers lead their team with compassion?
Yeah, I mean, the middle managers are the creators of culture, just because they're dealing with the masses, right? They are dealing with the people on a day-to-day. So how they're going to approach, like I said before, the attitudes and the behaviors and the attitude towards work or the approach to work, that's determined by the person who's overseeing that. And that's going to be done most often by middle managers. So again, they're having the biggest impact on that. So the founders and the executives, this is really a leadership question. It's about setting the example. And it's setting the example to the middle managers. And by that, it's building their trust. So building the trust that the middle managers have in their executives that, you know, we just talked about diversity. Can they be themselves? Can they be open? But it's also about building trust. Can they make mistakes, right? I've seen this often in organizations where the fear of making a mistake gets people to avoid trying, right? They won't take that risk. So the founder, especially as a founder of companies myself, you want that. You've taken the biggest risk. So you want to encourage that. So you need to build the trust in the people, and you do that by being honest and transparent, by showing your vulnerabilities. And having started some companies, Lord knows there are plenty of vulnerabilities and fears and so on, and showing that, because that's going to allow your people to understand that it's okay to be afraid to take a risk. It's okay to make a mistake as long as I learn from it and improve from it. And then again, you know, going back to diversity, it's building the trust so that it can be accepted. And again, it's diversity in all forms. And then it's removing obstacles. You know, the Great Resignation, we talked about when we spoke earlier. There was also the, during the pandemic, there was a lot of people who were leaving and changing jobs. We hear a lot about that, including the stress leave. what we don't hear a lot or factor in are one of the biggest segments of the workforce that was impacted were the middle managers. And that was because they were dealing with supporting and leading their staff, but they weren't getting that support. And so one of the biggest things that the founders and executives have to do is provide that support. Think about that middle manager and all they're doing. So removing obstacles, providing resources, and being a closer leader with them, being empathic and caring, can really help those middle managers understand what is desired, what needs to be done, and it can build their engagement towards the organization. And the last thing I'd say is follow up with the team. Sometimes it's good to find out directly from the team how that middle manager is doing. And it's not like, let's go find out what they're doing and check up on them, but rather let's get some honest feedback, because that honest feedback that can be used to help the manager grow and get better, that they might not be able to get directly from their team themselves.
That's really interesting. I liked what you said about risk as well, because I've always found some of the best work comes out of risk. And then when someone risks something and it doesn't work, it was never as bad as you thought it was going to be. Like, it was always worth the risk.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, I had an employee once who made a mistake, and she was so sorry. And I said, look, you making the mistake shows me that you tried something that it was outside of your comfort zone, which means you tried something new. And I would rather you did that than you just stay with what you know and you never grow. And so I think that's something that is lost often in companies, because people are afraid to disappoint. And again, that gets back to the trust that they have in their leader, that if they make that mistake, the leader may still be disappointed, but it's not the end of the world, like you said. And, you know, the sky's not going to fall, and let's learn from this and let's try and make sure it doesn't happen again.
You mentioned the great resignation as well. There's a new term I've been hearing on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. What is quiet quitting?
Yeah, I thought you'd go there. So quiet quitting is an interesting term, and it's not really that new as a phenomenon, but I think it's something that it's a hashtag and it's trending. So it's basically when employees give anywhere from the bare minimum to only what is described in their job. And you'll hear or you'll see the memes or the videos where people are saying, I'm paid for this and that's what I'm doing. I'm doing only what I'm paid for and nothing more. And so that's what quiet quitting is referring to.
What kind of impact does that have on like the companies and the employees?
Ah, huge impact. So it basically is and it's an engagement issue, right? Employees not willing to give more. And I'm not talking about hours. I think that we should be respectful of people's hours, and people should be able to go home and turn off and do their own thing and come back recharged and ready to go. The problem is they're coming back and not really recharged and ready to go. They're really just sticking at where they are. So for organizations, that's impacting their productivity. But it goes further down too. It starts with productivity, but it ends up with accountability, where people, you know, just doing the minimum, you can't really hold this against me. And how does a manager deal with that when they have a team who may be just doing the acceptable level? How do you get more? Well, it's going to impact. And I think a lot of managers are kind of lost with how you go about improving that. And there's definitely ways to do it, but the impacts can be really big. And on the employee side, you don't feel engaged. You're not really trying. And I think that we grow against resistance, right? We grow with challenges. But if you're kind of going in and you don't really feel like doing more than you have to, I know for myself, when I've been in roles like that, I felt like a depreciating asset myself. I felt like I was not growing, so I must be getting worse. And I think that still has a play on our psyches and how we feel about ourselves in the long term.
What can companies do to prevent it?
Well, again, it gets back to the leadership. And that's why for me, it's something that I focus on a lot when working with companies. You know, we're talking about productivity. We're talking about that work-life balance. And so how do we engage people? Well, I think part of that lack of engagement comes from lack of trust. For so long, you know, companies, to a certain extent, have done things that have eroded that trust. And so leaders need to start approaching it like on a person-to-person basis, building that confidence back. So how do you do it? Well, being transparent. When you're evaluating someone's performance, being honest, as opposed to trying to be nice. Being nice is not nice at all, actually, when you're holding back and being honest and allowing someone to improve. I see you. Yeah. And then getting back to the things I was saying, allowing mistakes, allowing diversity, these are all things that allow people to be themselves. And when people can be themselves, they can then self-actualize. And allowing them to understand, I think the most important thing, what's in it for you? Why is it important that we achieve this? It's great to say the company needs to do this. Great. What's in it for me? And that's something that we should always approach every time we're speaking to employees, talking about what's in it for you. Well, if we achieve this, it can mean X, Y, and Z. It's hard to squeeze in a whole lesson of leadership into one answer, but it really gets back to fundamentals of leadership and just being a people person.
It's funny you said about being nice. That was definitely something I learned early on, because it's your job to help the person grow. And if all you're doing is being nice, then they're not going to grow and they're not going to get any better.
Yeah. Yeah. I've read a lot about and learned a lot about nice cultures and how they're actually some of the most toxic cultures to work in, because when everybody has to agree and everybody has to be nice, well, that's great in the meetings. But what happens right after the meeting? Everybody starts talking about, you know, what this person said, and I didn't agree with it, and I don't like this. And so you start getting a very toxic environment, and it leads to a lack of accountability, because again, if everybody's nice, well, nobody's going to call anybody out for anything, and it further degrades productivity and the culture in that organization.
You've probably got way better ones than this, but the thing that I learned that really helped me was our COO told me that a term I could use when I'm want to be nice, but I need to say something, is areas of improvement. Let's talk about your areas of improvement. And that one just changed my life.
Yeah. I like that one, actually. I don't use that. I'm a little bit more blunt, but I'm the type of person who's very personable. I really get to know my people. And so they know me right from the start, and they can also be honest with me, right? So we have that back and forth. If I'm going to say, hey, love that you took an initiative, but it's not quite the way it's expected, they're understanding that me giving you this feedback, I'm not cutting you down. I'm building you up. I'm giving you the feedback. And then if I see that you can't do it the way we need to, well, what resources can I provide that are going to help you achieve that? And so, but again, and I've always used the, am I nice if I don't tell you the honest truth, but then, and having worked in HR, this happened a lot, run to HR and say, I got to get rid of this person. I can't take them anymore. But you've never told them anything. You've never worked with them to try and improve them. But rather, hey, let's work on your performance. Let's see what we can do to get you better. And then, you know, it's never should be a surprise if we ever have to move to termination because of performance, because we've worked on it. We've discussed it. I've been open with you. I've listened to you. And we're here.
Yes, that's exactly what someone told me. If the person's surprised that they're being terminated, that not they're being terminated, that the contract's being ended or yeah, they're being let go, then it's your fault as a manager. They should never be surprised.
Yeah. I learned a long time ago, you should, whenever you're getting to that point, you should spend some time in front of the mirror and ask yourself if you've done everything you could to help this person save their employment. Because when we terminate employment, we're not just affecting the employee, we're affecting their dependents, their families, and it has a big emotional impact with so much to do in the world, things going on. I think we need to be a little more considerate. And again, that goes back to culture. When we care about the people, sometimes when we care enough to let them go, but we do it in a humanistic way and we ask those questions, it builds a culture of trust and understanding.
Last question, and it's a bit of a mouthful. So there's been a lot of talk about a potential economic downturn, but there's still a labor shortage. And we're hearing about a, I can't remember what it was called, stagflation, because people are still, there's still enough employment, but we're seeing rising inflation. What does this mean for businesses, and what can businesses do about it?
Well, I'm going to limit myself to the labor shortage, that being my area of expertise, stagflation and all that. I think we're all kind of dealing with it. But it is a unique situation. I've worked long enough where I've seen when we've gone into recessions, typically you get a lot more candidates, and suddenly labor is, you've got the pickings and you can just go out and pick. It's not the case. And like I said, I work in a province where in Quebec, where when we post an ad versus an ad elsewhere in the country, I'll get 5 applicants versus in other parts of the country, we can get 50. So the labor shortage is acute here and has been for several years. And this is, of course, the biggest factor has to do with the baby boomers retiring. We've seen this train coming in for a long time, but not much has been done. And until to how things were, if we do with immigration and so on, this labor shortage is going to continue. So you mentioned marketing before, and I think recruiting needs to take more of a marketing approach. And for the longest time, and these aren't new, right? When I studied HR a long, long, long time ago, we talked about what I'm about to say, but it's finally come around where now we actually have to do these things. So when we post an ad, our recruiting has to be more like marketing. Yes, it's all fine to say, here's what the job entails, but how are you selling this? How are you building value so that somebody who's looking for a job says, I want to be there. That sounds like something for me. So I think that's the first thing, building value in the jobs that we place, and then analyzing, are we targeting the right demographics? And by demographics, I mean, you know, are we going after who we're looking to hire? Are we putting our ads in the right places? Are we using the right mediums, right graphics? We've got to be more creative in that sense. And then through the process, we need to be quicker. We need to be thorough through our selection process, but we need to be quick. And I'm talking about hours and days, not weeks. And that requires that when we're looking and we're posting and we're recruiting, there should be a dedication on a regular basis that, you know, I'm going to spend an hour a day or 2 hours a day doing this, just trying to fill this position, because it will get filled when we dedicate. But often we'll post and then say, I'll get back to it in a week or 2 weeks. Well, by the time you get back to a lot of those candidates, they've moved on, they found something else. Because the other thing is, people are they're only applying where it looks interesting. And they're going to take the ones that, the first one that reaches out to them. And then we need to do a better job at improving selection so that when we select people, we make the right choice, we bring them on and they stay. And then onboarding, I mean, these are the three basics, but, you know, I've worked in companies or I've been hired where you walk in and I remember the statistic that said most people will decide whether or not they stay long-term in a company within the first 3 days. So when you go in and it feels like, yeah, I don't know if that's still true, but it was something that I had heard when I studied HR. But I've worked in a company where I go in and it almost feels like you knew I was coming, but nothing is planned. It's like nobody cared. So we need to do better jobs as employers in saying, when we bring somebody on, let's make that special. We know what it's like to be new somewhere. So let's make them feel welcome. Let's make them feel like we thought about them and we want them to feel invited and at home. And then after that, how do you keep them? Well, that's all about culture, diversity, which is driven by leadership.
Thank you so much for joining us, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This was the FS podcast hosted by Exadel. Don't forget to follow us to hear more.